Good afternoon. This is Andrew Lubin from Leatherneck Magazine. Today we're interviewing Brigadier General Joseph Osterman, Commanding General, 1st Marine Division Forward. General, thank you for the time today.
Yeah, it's great to spend some time with you. Thank you for the invitation.
Great, thank you. Sir, you've been on the ground now since the end of March. Can you talk to us about the area where your Marines are at, which we understand is expanding, and what you'd be planning to do with them?
We're currently located in the Helmand province, and that's where essentially we have all of the 1st Marine Division forces. The only area in the province that we are not located is essentially the eastern portion, where there's Test Force Helmand, from the British troops that are over there. We do have a small portion of Farah province that we're also working up in the Golestan Buchi Pass area, but basically that's how we're laid down within the Helmand province primarily.
Okay. We understand that there's a new Afghan Corps, the 215th Corps. How are they working with the Marines? Are you training them, or have they come in pretty much spun up?
Well, the 215th Corps just finished their basic training, and they've gotten basically all of their Corps headquarters and their brigades down here in the Helmand province area. We've actually partnered with all of them, and they've gone through the training, so that partnering gives us a chance to do some enhanced training with them, and also currently many of them are doing operations already. Very good relationship with them, very motivated and positive group. They're deployed all the way from Dalaram down to, as far as south at Camp Dwyer, and then through Marja, and also here in the vicinity of Camp Leatherneck, we have the Corps headquarters, and my division staff in particular has been working very closely with that Corps headquarters.
You're right. With the amount of Marines you have that you have on the ground now and coming in, are there sufficient forces to flood the area the way that the Marines did in Anbar back in 2006-2007?
Yes, we've got quite a few forces, essentially doubled the size of the ground combat element from the initial forces that were associated with 2nd MEB when they came in. I think it's all relative in the sense of being able to actually have enough forces for all of the ground. The Helmand province that we're looking at encompasses, a good portion of the size of New England, so it's quite a large area. However, we're able to concentrate on the population in the province, which helps us to go ahead and focus our areas a little bit more in terms of where we have the forces laid down. And important to note there is the fact that not only do we have those Marine forces, but as just previously mentioned, the 215th Corps is partnered with us, which comes with about the same number of ground forces that I currently have, so it almost doubles the effect, again, from a military perspective. That obviously is exclusive of the police forces that we also have there. So I feel as though we have adequate force structure here in order to make a difference, and I think the province is moving in a good direction as a result.
So some of the problem with Helmand province, like you said, is the size. To compare it back to Anbar or Ramadi, when two or three streets got civilized and the next two or three streets wanted the same, with the Marines and ANA you have on the ground now, is the successes in the Garmseers and Nawaz and Canisian castles, is the word of mouth spreading into the areas that if you work with the Marines and the ANA, you have a better life?
Andrew, I'm sorry, the line was fuzzy there. I couldn't hear the question.
Okay, sir, I said the part of the problem with Helmand province, like you just said, is the size. It's part of mostly the size of New England. With the extra troop Marines you have there and the ANA Corps, does the word of the successes in Nawa, in Marja, in Nowzad, and in Garmseer, is that spreading through the area where one village hears how well the other's doing and they want to roger up and work with the Marines and the ANA?
Okay, I think I got the question. The last part was a little fuzzy. The successes that we're having in areas, especially the more mature areas like Garmseer, like Nawa, Nowzad, those types of areas, they are basically continuing to mature in a very typical coin fashion. In other words, the Marines have continued to press against the enemy in terms of moving them out away from the population. Over time, they gain the trust of the population, which then allows us to, with the development of the ANA, the Afghan National Army and the Afghan National Police, allows those security forces basically to come in to establish a presence, which then allows the Marines to push even further out, especially with their ANA partners. And as a result, you end up kind of with a classic almost inkblot strategy that allows this to continue to spread. We have moved into other areas such as Musakala here recently, where it's a very kinetic environment there. As the initial stages of these new areas that we're pushing into that the enemy has previously considered to be somewhat of a sanctuary area. So you find different places throughout the province, obviously moving forward in different levels of maturity, if you will. And as a result, they start to merge over time. But in my opinion, they are all moving in a very predictable and typical coin fashion.
That's good news, then. Now, to switch gears slightly and go out to the west, can you talk to us about Delaram? That must be, you've got the major road going down to Zaranj and down to Iran, and Delaram's got the hub for commerce in that part of Afghanistan. How secure is that, and what are your relations with the locals?
Actually, the relationship with the locals are good. They've got the district governance established there, in terms of being able to work with the local governance as it's coming together. We've actually invested into some major infrastructure for both the U.S. forces and the Afghan National Army in that area. The forces that we have there do, in fact, control, as you mentioned, that very key intersection. The road from Zaranj that comes up from the Iranian border is a hard surface road, and that intersects there at Delaram with the Route 1, which is obviously the major hard surface road in Afghanistan. So what we're really finding is that area is experiencing quite a bit of growth as a result of the intersection of those two major road systems. And again, it's probably one of, I would say, our more intermediate matured areas. It is progressing along well. The threat is fairly minimal there right now. The outlying areas that feed into that in terms of Bakwa and the Golestan area and places like that, as would be expected, we have a little more activity in those areas as we more or less keep the security bubble, if you will, pressed even further out in those directions.
Okay. Are you moving north from Golestan in the January 11th issue of Levinek, we wrote about the artillery battle where the Arty Bubbas were helping to drive the Taliban back into the caves. Have you pushed out beyond that area, north of Golestan?
No, there really hasn't been any need to. As you push further north from Golestan, it gets very, very mountainous. And those areas typically have not had a lot of insurgent activity. They tend to be less populated, and frankly, by pushing to where we have in the Golestan area, it provides enough distance security associated with Delaram and some of the other areas that we're more concerned about from a population standpoint. So there really hasn't been a need to push any further out in that direction. I think what you're referring to, the artillery and all, is right around the Buji Pass area, which leads up to Golestan. And initially we had some difficulties in there, but that had been cleared out. We still get the occasional IEDs through there, just like a lot of the other areas. However, by establishing some new bases in that area, we've put a lot more control in there than what used to be there.
Okay. Sir, who do you see as the major opponent the Marines are running up against? The big T Taliban, the really committed extremists, or are you running into more of the small T who are looking for jobs as much as anything else?
It's really kind of, as far as our counterinsurgency effort, it's a combination of both. The big T Taliban, or those that are commonly referred to as being irreconcilable, they are subject to operations associated with capture-kill type of opportunities. And consequently, you know, we have a certain segment of our forces that go after that in a very, very limited fashion. The bulk of our work actually is working with the population, which generally encompasses a lot of that small T Taliban. In other words, these are the folks that perhaps are placing IEDs for money, or they have been coerced or forced into doing certain things for the hardcore Taliban forces that are out there, insurgent forces. And so with those, obviously taking advantage of opportunities where we can give them employment to make money legitimately instead of illegitimately, we can, from a standpoint of local elders or mullahs or anyone else, you know, that we can go ahead and show them that from a community perspective, this is counter to trying to establish peace and security in the area, which is what most of the families really want. That's kind of the fundamental need of most of them. And through those processes, then, you know, we then bring the small T Taliban back into the fold, if you will. And it's very transitory in nature. So, you know, similar to Iraq, some of the people that we're fighting might very well be the people that we're working with the next day when they decide that really the better way to go is to support the government of Afghanistan and work with the coalition forces in trying to, and more importantly, their own communities in trying to establish a secure and a prosperous environment.
So you've probably sat down and sat through more shuras in the last month than you had ever imagined. Is there any one or two overriding things they're asking for, you know, medicine or schools or female doctors, anything coming across, you know, through your area that they all want?
I would say if there's a universal thing that they want, it's security. And with that, you know, we obviously turn that right back around to them, say we're happy to work with them to establish security. The military forces obviously can't be the end-all be-all in that regard, that from a community perspective, they have to take some responsibility that way also. And that may just be letting us know who are those big T Taliban that are in the area that just need to go and stop influencing or disrupting security. They also, obviously, from a perspective of livelihood, you know, that's important as it is anywhere. Schools, medical facilities, those kinds of things. Those are also basic needs out there that really, when you look at it, in my opinion, throughout the area that we have, most people just want to be able to raise their families in a secure environment. They want to have a little better education for their children so that they can be a little more prosperous in the future and more or less just be able to progress forward with their life. In the case of Afghans, it's not that they are asking for a lot. I mean, they're used to living in pretty austere conditions and in the rural areas, you know, just a very basic lifestyle. So it's not like their demands are very high in that regard. But if there's one thing I would say, it's probably just reestablishing security, which obviously we're working closely with them to reaffirm.
This really doesn't seem to be a very difficult war, does it? I mean, this is so simple an environment and so simple a people that giving them security, letting them take the ball and run with it, should be relatively easily doable, isn't it?
No, actually, in my mind, it's a very complex environment, probably more so than what I would classify conventional warfare to be. In this realm, I think the major thing to realize is that the terrain or the objectives that we're dealing with is a human terrain or the will of the people. And so consequently, the objective is really establishing or gaining the trust of the people and their willingness to work with you. So in my mind, anytime you're dealing with a human dynamic like that, it's much more complicated than, you know, your typical technologically oriented warfare or terrain oriented warfare or something like that. So I would say very complicated, but at the same time, I would say the Marines out here are doing an incredible job with it. Our young Marines are incredibly sophisticated in their approach, you know, to determine when to apply force, when not to apply force, you know, when to prevent civilian casualties and accept, you know, perhaps some risk in and when I say risk, you know, whether or not they should let somebody go only to capture them the next day kind of thing, rather than immediately trying to go after them. So those kinds of things in terms of measured response and really thinking about what their actions will have on that human terrain or that, you know, those people, frankly, is something that is pretty hard to do and requires a lot of savvy on the part of the young Marines.
That's very interesting, because the typical young Marine, the typical hard charger, is happier with the Fallujah and Nasiriyah than the current coin war. What did you do to get them trained up for this before you came over?
All of the units that come over go through the Marine Corps pre-deployment training program, and within that, I mean, there's obviously they go through the basic training, but then as they move through the deployment-specific training, they will go through both individual and collective training processes, which are designed not only to train them, if you will, in their individual skills, you know, how to operate the weapons, how to do a patrol order, how to do, you know, those kinds of things. But also a big part of the process is to try and educate them. And I guess my personal way of describing that is not only telling them what to think, but working with them to learn how to think, and so that they can make decisions, intuitive decisions that are done on the spur of the moment, that are in very complex environments. And some of the ways that we do that are to put them in scenarios during the training process, for example, at 29 Palms, where they're working with Afghan role players who are there as part of the training exercise, so that they get immersed in the culture and the language and the nuance of different surroundings, different people and the way that they act and the way that they interact. And consequently, it gives them, the Marines, a good foundation before they come over of how to, you know, work with that human dynamic that is really the crux of the coin fight.
Excellent. Sir, one more question before we have to sign off, unfortunately. What do you want to tell us about the Marines and about One Mech Forward in Southern Helmand?
I guess what I would like to say is that the young Marines that are here are doing just an incredible job. Watching them be able to escalate from a very, very kinetic fight, literally within moments, back to a, you know, the caring for civilians and the respect for cultural, important cultural aspects of the community. At the same time, understanding the importance of development, of governance, of working and living with their ANSF partners and building relationship with those Afghan Army partners, those Afghan police partners. It really is just amazing to watch the capacity that these young men and women have. And in watching what they do, I've got the fullest confidence that we'll be very successful over the coming year and making quite a difference here in bettering the life of the Afghan folks that live here in Helmand Province.
Great. Sir, thank you for the time today. This is Andrew Lubin from Leatherneck Magazine, who's been talking with Brigadier General Joseph Osterman, Commanding General, 1st Marine Division Forward. Sir, thank you for the time, and hopefully we'll be able to check back with you another month or so.
I look forward to it, and thank you very much for the time as well.
Okay. Thanks. David's out here. General, this is great. Thank you for the time today. Is this what you're looking for, I hope?
I'm sorry, Andrew, couldn't hear you.
No, I said, this is what you're looking for, I hope, you know, an opportunity to kind of get your message out.
Oh, yes, definitely. No, it was great. And I really appreciate the forum and the types of questions there. That was right on the money. I apologize. The connection is just so bad. I was having a hard time hearing some of the exact points the questions.
No, you sure heard Mondays with Colonel Newman. That was just the worst I've done in years. That had to be like a 2003 quality type of interview. That's just awful. It is what it is. That's all.
Okay. All right. Hey, well, again, thanks for the time. And do you need to talk to Lieutenant Benson again?
Yeah,
he's right here.
Fine. And sir, anytime you want to engage, I mean, even if there's something going on, I mean, yeah, I push this one. There's something coming on you want to talk about. You got my email at home, you know, or have Josh get a hold of me. We can do this anytime. That's not a problem.
Okay, great. I look forward to it. And, you know, as we have some highlighted events there, I'll be sure to have him get in touch with you, and then we can kind of keep you updated on the latest and greatest.
Sounds good. Yeah, and now my ETD is 20 May, so I'll be with you. I'll only be down to your area the entire, you know, for all of June. And actually, my son's leaving next. I'm going out to 29 Palms on Monday to see him off, and then I'll be over there at the end of May, and you'll be stuck with me. You'll push me out in the field through the month of June sometime.
Okay, great. Hey, we'll look forward to seeing you then.
Good. Thanks again. Appreciate the time.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.